City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday.
Oh, hey! Didn't see you come in. Won't you join us by the fire?
You know, we folks here at System Mastery just love the holiday season, and even more than that, we love to share it with folks like you.
We know everyone has different ways of getting in the holiday spirit, so we figured we would share some of our traditions with all of you. Who knows? Maybe they can become your traditions too.
One of the most time-honored traditions in my house is the selection of a Christmas tree. No fake trees for us. We always love that smell of fresh pine as it fills up the house.
That does sound lovely. Our family always uses the plastic tree, though. It's economical and saves on cleanup and disposal every year.
Of course, when it comes to those family gatherings, there's going to be some feasting to do. We normally do turkey, but my dad kicks it up in his special way with his deep fryer. How about you, John?
Part of our family tradition every year is that me and my dad will go out together and kill the biggest goose we can find.
Wow, so you do goose for Christmas dinner?
No, we have ham.
Wait, so...
Of course, decorations are a big part of things, from ornaments to lights and everything else. How do you make your home feel festive?
Oh, well, we usually string the lights up outside, but nothing super fancy. We went with a red and white theme for the interior decorations this year.
We always go all out for decorating. Why, the front lawn has a nativity scene, a snowman, and of course, the Christmas sleigh.
Do you mean like Santa's sleigh?
Well, he's obviously involved, but I don't think the sleighing is necessarily only his.
Now hold on, when you say sleighing, are you-
Speaking of wanton indulgence, it's just not Christmas without those sweet desserts every year.
We always build ourselves some gingerbread houses with little gingerbread men, though it can be hard putting those together without eating your way through the building materials.
Well, that sounds like fun. Maybe we should start doing that too.
Great. I can even share our gingerbread house kit with you.
Nothing represents the season like tiny men in a house made of their own flesh, their dawning realization that they are not but food for something greater.
Well, that's not really...
They scream in silent horror as their hands run along the walls of their torturous prison. What malevolent god would allow such a monument of unbridled cadaverous decadence? What sick and twisted being would mold flesh into a dwelling and then decorate it so deliciously?
John, that's not...
The disgust turns to acceptance, turns to desperation. What was once a house of atrocity becomes their only salvation. The hunger takes hold. They reach out. Soon they will feast, and all will be revealed.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Oh no, nothing worse than a winter cold. That's why we here at System Mastery hope you bundle up this holiday season. From all of us here to all of you out there, I'm John.
Oh God.
And that's Jeff. Have a happy holiday.
Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Afterthought, the podcast that is a companion piece to System Mastery. It comes out every other week, and every other week, all we do is discuss the game that we most recently reviewed on System Mastery, and then answer questions from you, the folks at home.
That's exactly what we do. You are correct.
I know I'm correct. I don't need you to tell me that I'm correct.
It's a good job. You did a good job.
I feel like you're patronizing me a little bit here. And I haven't even introduced you yet.
You're a good boy, and now, you're definitely going to get a reward after this.
Now I don't even know if I want to introduce you. I feel like you've lost that privilege.
It's not a privilege. It's a right.
Anyway, I'm Jeff. Welcome to Afterthought. What did we review this week? Mysterious Nameless Stranger?
Yes. The Nameless Wonder. John.
The man with no name. Ted.
So we most recently did Champions, the most popular version of playing in the Hero system.
That sounds right to me.
It sounds right, and yet...
I feel like, didn't we review like a cookbook or something, though?
Yeah, we reviewed Light and Spicy.
Ah, yes, Light and Spicy, 1988's finest examples of things you can cook that are good for your budget, good for your wallet, and good for your belly.
Yeah, just a little light. and a little spicy.
Because, you know, when you're eating light, the worst thing you can do is also eat bland.
Light and blandly. That's what I eat.
You don't eat light.
I eat light. I'm like a black hole.
Pizza cannot escape your event horizon.
Yes. Whenever pasta gets near me, it spaghettifies. Yeah.
And granted, most things can escape your event horizon because you're just too lazy to even lift an arm and keep things in. Honestly, I'm surprised you trap enough photons to have a color to you. So, yeah, we covered Champions, a role-playing game of some note because it has been around for a long time and has a lot of proponents and folks who are big fans. And as a couple people put in the comments that after we put it out, it is sort of the high watermark of how much math you're allowed to put in a role-playing game before it becomes too much math and the wave rolls back.
Yeah, I mean, there are, of course, lots of examples of more math than this.
Yeah, you got your Phoenix commands and so on. I guess to some people, this is sort of the turning point. This is right here. Any further, and you have ruined the game. But this is an okay amount of math.
The line must be drawn here. This far, no further.
Well, I'm just going to step right over that and have a little more math in my game. Is that okay?
No, if you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
Oh, but because I'm not, because I am this particular man, you're not going to?
Indeed.
All right, well, then I'm going to step over the line because you've just told me that I have immunity.
Damn it.
Anyway, did you have a conversation about Champions at the ready?
Of course, there's always the math argument to go into.
How much math is too much math?
Yeah, how much math is too much math?
Well, I feel like it's not all that hard to tell just as a sort of gut feeling gauge. If the examples in the book, if they're like, all right, you need to hit that guy and deal some damage. Here's three paragraphs of calculations you need to do. You need to do them every time because a lot of the variables are going to change.
Yeah. The thing is, I like crunchy systems. Like, as much as we tout all of the very light and fluffy systems,
yeah,
I do like a good deal of crunch to my game.
Mm-hmm. And your granola.
Yeah. Just a real good crunch in there. Don't give me that soft and chewy shit.
You don't want too many pieces of dried fruit in your granola?
Nah, man. What I'm looking for is that Nature Valley honey and oat, crispy, dry granola.
Fair enough. See, I can't even picture granola in my mind. For some reason, all I can see is trail mix.
That's weird.
I know. I'm like, trail mix. I could go for some of that right now. All with them little tiny M&Ms.
I mean, you can get those, like, trail mix granola bars.
Yeah, and there is trail mix that has granola in it, but I'm still not sure where this is coming from in my head.
I don't know, man.
But I just can't. Okay, I'm just going to picture honey bunches of oats, and I hope that that's close enough.
Close enough. The thing for me is, when I look at a system and I go, what I'd really want to do with this system is have a computer do it for me. At that point, I feel like it's too much.
I can see that. Like, there's some computer games where they have a tremendous amount of math, but it's all happening behind the scenes, so you don't really have to worry about it.
Exactly. So if I'm looking at a game and I go, oh man, this requires me to roll a lot of dice or count some things. I mean, there are things that I would want to do in a game, like, oh, this makes it so that every time you roll dice, you have to count something. And I'm like, okay, if it's a thing I can do quickly or if I get some cool benefit out of doing it, sure. But if it's like, every time you roll the dice, you have to do this weird calculation. And that doesn't give you anything, it's just what you have to do to hit.
Do you think the line is somewhere between the combat system in Exalted 3rd Edition and the craft system in Exalted 3rd Edition then? Is that where we're landing?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Okay. If you don't know what we're talking about, in Exalted 3rd Edition, craft has like 35 charms you need to take before you can be considered a competent crafter.
Yeah.
And almost all of them are just things like, if you roll an 8, re-roll all the 6s you roll until none of them show 2s.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like I was saying, if you have to do a bunch of complicated nonsense, but all it means is that's what you have to do to accomplish your goal, period, then I feel like that's unnecessary. But if it's, you can add on, like, you can have some ability that's like, yeah, whenever you do this, if you find a straight in your dice, you get an extra whatever. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
At least then I get something more and cool out of it instead of just, all right, every time you roll to hit, you have to do a complex algebra equation and then just tell me whether you hit or not.
and how well you hit, and how much damage you deal, and where you deal the damage to the person that you are hitting.
No, those are all separate rolls.
Yeah, that's
true. With separate calculations.
Well, sometimes they're baked in.
Sometimes.
It's weird when they are. We've seen games where they're baked in, where it's like, did you roll a 37 to hit? Well, that does hit, and it also hits them in the wing. I'm sorry, they don't have a wing, so you miss.
Great.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like Champions was a bit of a slog to read. That might just be because I only had a week to do it. I feel like it's the sort of game where I could come to enjoy it.
I mean, of course, Heroes System is very famous for being super complicated. And I feel like if I had a program that did everything for me,
yeah,
or if I had a GM who was super crazy experienced with it, then
that was definitely something it felt like Champions would need.
Yeah,
because I mean, the book didn't even shy away from it. The book was like, look, DM, you need to know everything, because people are going to be constantly asking you all kinds of tiny weird questions that seem arbitrary and pointless, and you have to answer them.
Yeah, but in a system like that, it's not even like weird and arbitrary, because there is probably some weird thing that you have to know math wise to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like, oh, I wanted to make a character that does muh, can I do that? And you have to go, all right, well, mathematically you can take this and that, and then you'll get this many points, and it'll do whatever. So, you know, you do kind of need to be a bit of an expert on the system.
I would be inclined to agree. Oh, by the way, this is John, everybody.
Holy shit, where did I come from?
I wanted to finally give you your intro. I know it's been about 7 minutes, and you know, earlier you just hadn't earned one, but I can't stay mad at you, you scamp. All right, so John, how's your day been?
Well, kind of lethargic. Had a big, heavy breakfast at the Soup Plantation.
Yeah, Soup Plant, the place that collects soup and pee together at last.
Yeah, the endless breakfast that they have on the weekends means
it's just all the worst things about breakfast, and you can have them as many times as you want.
Well, the problem for me is I normally don't eat breakfast, so getting up and going and eating breakfast and then eating a lot of breakfast is just a recipe to make me hate life for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I'm always real careful nowadays when I go to Soup Plantation to not reload too many times. Like, I have a plan going in.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a necessity when I go there. I'm like, all right, I need a potato thing, so I'm going to get the potato thing. I'm going to get one blueberry muffin. I don't like eggs, so I'm going to skip that. I'm going to pile up a bunch of fresh fruit, and I'm going to eat those things, and I am good to go.
Yeah, it's why I generally look at Soup Plantation and several other types of buffet-type things, and I'm like, you know, a lot of the time it's not really worth it, because either you go in there and you're like, man, there's not a lot I want to eat, and you just sort of get a little something and you're paying too much for it.
Yeah, you feel like you're wasting money. Yeah, I can see that.
Or you're like, well, I've got to eat a whole shitload because I'm paying for it, and then you just ruin yourself.
Yeah. Man, the first time I ever got stoned, I went to Soup Plantation.
Man, that is a bad idea.
Yeah, I got crazy high, and I went to Soup Plantation. I had someone with me who was not stoned, so it was going to be, it wasn't like I was in a dangerous situation. But I got way too high because it was on edibles. I hadn't smoked weed.
Ah.
And so I was like, I'll eat three of these brownies. Who gives a shit? Okay, let's go get Soup Plantation. And then I ate an insane amount, of course.
And then I ate the entire Soup Plantation.
Well, I ate a lot of food. And then I was happy the whole time. I was really enjoying myself. And when it was time to go, I just sort of blissfully stood up and walked out with my girlfriend. And she was laughing at me because apparently I was walking in a stoned way. I became convinced while walking, and this is because I had eaten far too much. I had eaten the hallucination amount of weed, which is possible. It just doesn't happen to most people because they have some goddamn self-control, or because they don't know how edibles, or they do know how edibles work.
Yes.
So I was convinced that my stomach was going to swell up and explode like what happened to What's-Her-Face in Cloverfield.
Okay, so you were convinced that someone had just given you a wafer-thin mint.
Yes, and I was literally going to swell up and explode, and that it took all my energy and all my concentration to not blow up.
Good.
So I was walking along with Florence, with my girlfriend there, just going, don't blow up, don't blow up, try not to blow up. Okay, you're blowing up a little, do not blow up. Maintain, don't blow up. And the whole time I didn't want to tell my girlfriend because she would be, of course, so sad if I blew up.
Of course.
And I didn't want to ruin her day.
No, you don't want to tell her that you're going to blow up, because then she'll just be worried.
Yeah, I don't need her to worry. I just need to maintain. And besides, if I tell her I blow up, I'm not concentrating on not blowing up.
Exactly. The more you talk, the less you're thinking about not blowing up.
Yeah. So she goes, I need to go to the Walmart that's right behind this soup plantation. And I'm like, okay, I don't have the time or the wherewithal to tell her, no, I can't go with you to a Walmart. It's too distracting. I'll blow up.
Yeah.
So instead, I walk around to Walmart very slowly, making sure not to blow up.
Good. We're all very glad that you decided not to blow up that day.
It's true. So that's my story about going to soup plantation and eating entirely too much food. I became actually for reals convinced it would cause me to explode.
Good. Excellent.
All right, so do you want to answer some listener questions rather than just rambling on about drugs and Walmarts?
No, not really.
Well, we have to. We have to do them at some point.
You know, I mean, probably at some point we should, but...
Okay, well, what do you want to talk about instead? How you doing?
Let me just tell you a little something. Today I watched, for the first time ever, A Christmas Story.
Oh, any particular Christmas story?
A Christmas Story.
Oh, you watched A Christmas Story. So you watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas...
Yep.
Yeah, you watched maybe Rudolph Meets That Little Baby.
Yeah, I love that one. Rudolph Meets That Little Baby.
I don't remember any of those Rankin Bass titles. They're
Christmas
always so weird.
Classic.
He does. He meets Baby New Year or whatever. And then they fight like a vulture or something.
Fight the vulture.
Those Rankin Bass.
Spider-Man shows up.
Yeah, they fight vulture. They fight vulture and Shocker. Do Rudolph and Baby New Year.
Yeah, I hate to spoil Spider-Man Homecoming, but big climax has Rudolph and Baby New Year helping Spider-Man fight Vulture and the Shocker.
I honestly can't remember a single one of those Rankin-Bass Christmas classics. They're always so weird when you watch them. You're like, man, there is a lot of stuff about a lumberjack in this.
Man, you know what's also weird? Never seen any of those.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, okay. So, to get past my stupid conceit of not letting John get the question across, he watched the movie A Christmas Story starring Peter Billingsley and Darren McGavin.
Yeah, and that is the first time I had ever seen it today.
Yeah, and I can't imagine seeing it for the first time ever, like in your 30s and you're just sort of tired, because it's going to be boring because you don't have the years of historical experience.
No. Trying to watch this movie was almost torturous to me, because I'm like, this is boring. This is like... The Wonder Years as a movie, and I hate The Wonder Years.
Yeah. Yeah, watching it with you was a depressing experience for me, because I watch it every year with my dad. Him and I sit down, we watch that movie together, we talk about all the cars and fire trucks that are in it, and try and pretend like we're able to tell what year it's set, even though it's intentionally made so you can't. Like, there's fire trucks from the 30s and cars from the 50s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we're always like, well, those characters in... They're all dressed up for Wizard of Oz. That would set this movie around 1939. Well, okay, but there's a 1951 fire truck parked outside. Also, Santa didn't look fat and jolly until 1945. Blah, blah, blah. So I have some things I can derive from it, because I've seen it so many times that I'm down to watching the minutiae.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I'm going to take in the story of this movie. Oh, there isn't one? It's just a long, shaggy dog story about a kid who gets a BB gun? Oh, okay.
Yep, that's it. It's just... I'm a little kid, and I wanted this gun, and occasionally I fantasize about things, and man, there is nothing going on here.
It's so sad that that's what happens if you don't watch it early enough, because when you're a kid, you watch it, you're like, man, I am so on Team Ralphie. I want him to have his gun, I want him to get a good grade on his school paper, I hate Scott Farkas, and his little toady friend, I think his name is Donald something or other.
Yeah, Pleasance.
Yeah, Donald Trumpy Pleasance. Oh, Trumpy, he can do stupid things. But as you grow up, you're like, man, these parents are great. This movie is all about these rad parents. But with you, you're just like, this movie's about nothing.
This movie is like the worst episode of Wonder Years.
The worst part about the movie when you're watching it through your eyes for me was that there is never not a child crying in the background of that film.
Yeah. It's always just whiny kid going, eh.
Yeah, most of the time it's what's his Randy, the little brother.
Yeah,
like the least important and most annoying character in the history of films.
Uh huh.
But even when he's being quiet, they're at a mall. There's still some kid in the distance crying.
Yeah, or it's Ralphie doing it.
Yeah, it's one of the. Oh yeah, Ralphie gets some of it, some in as well.
Yeah.
Are you excited to watch the sequel? There's a sequel out there. It still has Peter Billingsley in it, but I don't believe anyone else returns.
Great.
You can't, but you can't wait, right? It's about like summer or something. It's summer vacation something, or I haven't seen it either. Also, the kid who gets his tongue stuck to the pole, I want to say, I might be wrong, folks. I
want to say
this.
He died drinking Coke and eating
either
Pop
him,
Rocks.
It's either him or Schwartz, the other kid that's just a friend of the main two, ended up being like one of those people who's the guy who doesn't actually have sex in porn. Like, you know, the one who's like, I'll just leave you kids alone. Huh. He's in like a million gay porns.
Amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. John saw A Christmas Story. Your review in 5 words, John.
That was not very good.
Hey, not bad. Your review in 7 words.
That was not very good at all.
Thank you. 4?
That was pretty bad.
All right. So you didn't care for it.
No, not a fan. I cannot wait for people to either tell me that I am an idiot or totally right.
Well, how about this? What's the best Christmas movie? And you're not allowed to say Die Hard.
Okay, then Gremlins.
Damn it. Okay, no Die Hard, no Gremlins, no Lethal Weapon.
But Gremlins is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, really?
It's about a Christmas present.
Okay, then what's the second best Christmas movie? No Die Hard, no Lethal Weapon, no Gremlins.
Okay, you're taking all the good ones off the table?
Yeah, second best Christmas movie out of the leftovers.
Yeah, okay, out of the leftovers, second best Christmas movie, I'm going to go with... Man, I don't even know. There's just not a lot of good ones.
Yeah, man, it's a pretty dire field, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
Scrooged. I'm going to go with Scrooged.
Yeah, I was going to say there are a couple, like, comedy ones that aren't bad. So yeah. Scrooged is good.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with, that's going to be me. I'm going to go with Scrooged or, actually, you know what? I'm changing mind. You can have Scrooged. I'm going to go with the Muppet version of The Christmas Carol.
Which is okay.
Yeah, I love that. So that's going to be for me.
I mean, classic for me, what I would watch as a kid all the time was the Disney Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah, with Scrooge McDuck as your Ebenezer Scrooge.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a fine choice as well.
Yeah.
I also am a huge fan of Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Which is so bad.
But again, it's one of those movies where you didn't see it early enough, so if I show it to you, you'll be like, man, I fucking hate these puppets, I hate their songs.
I do not care about anything that is going on here. Otter wants some barbecue or something. I just don't care.
He wants his washtub to not be broken, and he wants some money so he can buy his mama a shawl or something. So he enters into a competition against the River Bottom Nightmare Band, who have a big hit song called River Bottom Nightmare Band.
Obviously.
Of course. And they sing a song called Hole in the Washtub.
Yep.
And then it turns out that their song matches up real nice with their mom's song when she enters as well.
Good.
Yeah, great. I love that movie, but you, of course, would hate it.
Nope. You've shown it to me, and it was pretty bad.
Okay. One of my favorites.
All right, let's get to questions before I just continue to shit on all of your holiday favorites.
Meh.
Humbug.
You know what? Gremlins wasn't very good.
Nah, Gremlins is pretty much unimpeachable. The only thing better than Gremlins is Gremlins 2.
I know. God damn it. All right. Okay, let's get to some questions. You want to take the first one, John?
Sure, why not?
Questions from listeners. You can always send us your questions at systemmastery@gmail.com or on Reddit in the Afterthought Questions post.
Okay, this one comes to us from Palmed Fire. In regards to tacos, soft corn tortillas, crunchy corn tortillas, or soft flour tortillas?
All right, let's see. Well... I mean, to be honest, we're both San Diegan, so we have a lot of range of options here, and yet being San Diegan means that we almost never go with tacos.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a burrito, because the burritos in San Diego are the best in the world, and I'm saying they're better than Mexican burritos. when I do go with tacos, I usually go with soft corn.
Usually, soft corn is what you're usually going to get.
Yeah, soft corn is
I'll take a soft flour if they've got it. Yeah. Usually, crunchy corn... means I'm getting, like, some bullshit...
That's the thing.
Like, Taco Bell tacos.
Yeah, soft corn is what you get when you order a good taco.
Yeah.
Like, when we go down to the La Tiendita, which is the local little Mexican store near us that serves, like, tacos, the soft corn is what you're going to get no matter what you order.
Yeah, because that's what they do.
And it's amazing. Some tasty chorizo or adobada up in there. It's fantastic. And, of course, San Diego also has Baja Mexican culture, which means we get the fish taco, which is served on 2 soft corn tortillas.
Yep.
Do you know there are people out there who have never heard of that thing? Because it's more regional than you think.
It is?
Oh, yeah. The fish taco is mysterious to people from outside of San Diego as the California burrito.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that you don't see on a Taco Bell menu, so. Yeah.
So the fish taco, which you can get here in San Diego and people have gotten used to them, is two corn tortillas, a piece of fried fish, white sauce, salsa fresca, and cabbage. And you have to do cabbage because if you do lettuce, it'll wilt because of how hot the fish is.
Yeah.
And it is the best. It is the best taco out there. If you haven't heard of it, you owe it to yourself to find some. I mean, I'm sure Rubio's is spread all over the world by
probably.
Now. Probably. So maybe this is old information.
All right.
If it is, I'm sorry.
And also ask, what's the largest number of skills you've seen an RPG have?
I don't know the exact number, but it is over 300, and that was in Immortal, The Invisible War.
Yeah, just crazy amounts.
Yeah, so over 300 in Immortal, The Invisible War. By the way, John, did you want to go ahead and give one of those away?
What, Immortal?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
So, folks, we have a couple duplicates here and there in our library of amazing role-playing games that we have covered for you, the listener. One of them is Immortal, The Invisible War. And if you would like a signed copy, not by the author, because I don't know who that is and screw them. By the System Mastery team. If you would like a signed copy of Immortal, what you'll want to do is follow us on Twitter and then retweet this episode. Just this episode, just retweet that. Eventually, we'll take, probably at the end of the month or whatever, we will do a random drawing, and the winner will contact you, and you will win a signed copy of Immortal, The Invisible War, one of the worst games we've ever covered. It took us two episodes to get through it. Thank God we had two copies at the time, because it was impossible to read.
Yep.
But it can be yours. You can win a copy of this game. All you have to do is retweet this episode once we post it.
Yep, there you go.
So, that's out there. That's a real contest, folks. We're not making that up. We'll contact you for your address. We will mail you this game signed by us. So just letting you know, that's out there now.
All right. Also ask, why do designers keep thinking that huge skill lists are a good idea?
And verisimilitude.
Well, that's mostly because they can't imagine having a skill that covers too much stuff. Because it's one of those things where you're like, well, I studied whatever and I don't know something related to it, so obviously there shouldn't be only one skill for it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Or people don't like the idea that, or they get that in their head where they're like, well, entomologists study insects and herpetologists study reptiles, and of course those are wholly different things, so it wouldn't even make sense. No one goes to a bugs and snakes class.
Yeah, so the whole thing of, I need to drill this down so that it's as realistic as possible, makes it so that you end up almost being unrealistic, because you have people who are like, I know all about a couple of things, and then literally nothing else.
Yeah, it makes it so your character has a ultra-narrow scope, unless you give the character hundreds and hundreds of skills, in which case, why are you bothering?
Yeah.
They're never going to have to roll on their ability. Like, for example, Immortal has Lapidary as one of its skills, and Immortal is a game set in the modern world. Lapidary is the ability to set precious and semi-precious gemstones for display.
Yep.
So, you know, if you need to, when are you ever going to make a roll for that? It's not even like you'd use it to craft a magic gemstone.
No, it's a skill that is so useless as to be hard to even come up with a reason to do it. Like, at least some other skills, I go, oh yeah, you've got like 100 skills in your skill list, and I mean, maybe I can understand why you have two different things for like, oh, this guy's got like rope use as an entire skill different from climbing and whatever. Like, okay, I can maybe come up with some scenarios for that.
Yeah, there may be some synergies between them or whatever.
But shit like I know how to do gem cutting. I'm like, okay, great. You have watch repair? Wonderful. I don't understand why this is a thing.
Yeah, so anyway, it all stems from verisimilitude and overly, kind of a little over world building. Which, you know, I'm always in favor of world building if people want to do it, but there are levels that can be too much.
Yeah. And then finally, going back to an earlier conversation, what are your favorite breakfast foods?
Well, I have it on record and public authority that I dislike eggs.
Which is weird. You're a weirdo.
I know. Whatever. So a lot of my breakfast foods are just simple baked goods or fruit. I'm a big fan of fruit for breakfast. And, of course, good old-fashioned cereal.
Yep.
What's your go-to breakfast cereal, John?
Go-to breakfast cereal most of the time is going to be either a Cinnamon Life.
Okay, Cinnamon Life.
Golden Grahams.
Yeah, Golden Grahams.
Or if I'm feeling particularly naughty, I'll get the Reese's Puffs.
All right. I'm a big fan of Corn Pops.
Corn Pops is fine.
Yeah, the Corn Pops are my go-to.
I think like once a year I get in the mood for some Corn Pops.
Yeah, Corn Pops. Let's see. I also really like Frosted Flakes. And my big favorite, my go-to, the ones I actually have in the house right now, Honey Nut Cheerios.
You know, I don't dislike Honey Nut Cheerios, but it's kind of bland for me.
Yeah, the other thing is I buy Cinnamon Toast Crunch and just eat it like chips. It's useless if you put milk in it, but it's fantastic by the fistful.
Yeah, yeah. For me, favorite breakfast food, I got to go, like, very simple, eggs and bacon. For me, just a very easy, that's great. I love me some French toast as well.
Yeah, I'd say my go, like, if I was... put a gun to my head and say you also have to do something the rest of the day, so you can't just eat pancakes. I'm gonna say bacon and grapefruit.
Oh, it's man, grapefruit is so nasty.
You're allowed to be wrong. It's okay.
I am. However, instead of that, grapefruit's nasty.
No, grapefruit's fantastic. You're nasty.
Yes, it's why people call me Miss Jackson.
I was gonna say Janet Jackson says you're nasty if you don't like grapefruit. All right, next question comes to us from North Star. It says, Jeff, have you ever tried Hawaiian lavender and macadamia nut with red aloe spice with your pork? It really takes it to a new level. I have to be honest. No, I have not. No, I don't even know what that last one. Red aloe spice I've never even encountered, so I'm going to have to look into that and find it. I have done lavender with pork, but I've never specifically sourced it to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But I have done some lavender and citrus pork that was really good, so I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a shot. Plus, I got to be honest here. I'm not a big macadamia guy.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I'll give it a try because I'm sure they'll infuse some flavor in and pull some flavor out of the pork. But normally, I feel like macadamia just tastes like frozen butter. So it's just not my go-to nut.
I do like some macadamia nut.
I know we rarely get along on food.
It's true.
Yeah. And then over to John. Pizza pockets or hot pockets? Which is best in life?
Well, they come with pizza hot pockets, porque no los dos.
So pizza hot pockets. It's not going to be that broccoli and cheese lean pocket. That's not your favorite?
Oh, God, no. I love broccoli and cheese, but don't put it in a hot pocket. Good God, if I'm eating a hot pocket, I've already given up on life. Don't let me pretend.
All right, what is the best hot pocket? Is it the pizza?
Yeah, it's the Lamentations of Their Women hot pocket.
The glory of conquest hot pocket. Well, honestly, if you're eating a hot pocket, you're going to hear some lamentations from someone eventually.
Yeah, eventually. Probably out your butt.
Yeah. And dear Annie the astrologer, my question is about the composite chart between my wife and I. We have both Saturn and Jupiter prominent and somewhat challenging. I am having troubles understanding this because Saturn and Jupiter are so different and almost opposite in nature. Do they in some way cancel themselves out?
Yeah. Yeah, no, if Jupiter and Saturn were to hit it into each other, that would probably cancel each other out.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure that Saturn is an anti-Jupiter, so that does add up. Now, look, if the moon is in the seventh house, then love will... Wait, I don't remember the song.
Damn it.
And
Jupiter aligns with Mars.
And Jupiter aligns with Mars, then love will... Something,
rule the planet.
Will rule the planet. Is that it? It's
from the planet. Something, this something, something stars.
Of the age of Aquarius.
He's an awesome dude.
That's Aquarian.
Yeah, I know.
Aquarius is a nobody.
Well, Aquarius is one of the villains from the astrology gang.
Is he really?
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch
of... Who fights the astrology gang?
Avengers? There's a whole thing where it's like... What are you? I'm Leo, and I'm a dude in, like, a lion head, and I'm Pisces, and I'm some fish dude.
That is somehow worse than the Royal Flush Gang.
Oh, yeah. No, like, Sagittarius is just an archer guy, and they all, it's just 12 of them, and they all have various costumes based on the different astrology signs. So you got, like, giant buff Cancer guy who's like, I'm a crab dude, and he's got snippers. He'll snips you.
That is so dumb.
Yep.
That is really hurting me right now.
Oh, man. I'm a Marvel guy, and the amount of dumb bullshit villains in Marvel is amazing.
All right. So let me ask you a quick trivia question here, John. Completely unrelated to the original question.
Completely.
All right. Do you know the Marvel version of the DC Heroes? The DC Justice League?
You mean the Squadron Supreme?
Thank you. Good. Now, can you name the DC parody version of the Avengers?
No, of course not. I don't know DC. Why would I know that?
I was just curious if you could pull it off just because they are a Marvel parody. Like,
yeah.
They are the Champions of Angor.
Great.
Anyway, moving on. Let's see here. That means it's your turn.
Oh, that was the last one from him.
That
so
was the last
now
one from
we,
him, yeah.
We go to Gaming Hipster. It occurred to me the other day as I was listening to your podcast in the shower that aside from 20 minutes walking my dog each day, I mostly listen to you in a state of undress. Is that weird? Or is it just made weird by the fact that I felt the need to tell you that?
Oh, well, finally, because we record this in a state of undress.
Yeah, this is all naked all the time.
Oh, yeah, we're 100% in tune with nature.
We give you the nude truth.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm surprised it hasn't come up before. I mean, we've had guests on the show.
Oh, it's come up when we're recording, if you know
oh,
what I mean.
Oh, my.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, all those times we've recorded with James, and he doesn't say a word. It's so professional of him.
I know, right?
Yeah. Anyway.
So he also says, I bought the Traveler bundle from Bundle of Holding, and now I have dozens of PDFs that have been sitting in a folder for months, and I just cannot be bothered to read them. What does this say about me as a person and or as a gamer?
So did you at least read like one of them? Did you read like Traveler, the core book?
Honestly, what it says about you as a person slash gamer is you are exactly like everyone else because basically every like into it RPG player, instead of someone who's just sort of like, yeah, I occasionally play it, I'm not really into it. Anyone who's like an RPG gamer is... All of them have been like, yeah, I've got games on my shelf. I've never even read them.
Yep.
I just bought them because they looked neat.
Well, would you remember our friend James just like, or to James, our friend George just a couple of days ago saying, I just bought a full Gene Stealer cult army and I do not play 40K and do not intend to.
Yeah. He's like, maybe when the next edition comes out, I will do it. I don't know.
He's just like, I had a good deal and I bought it.
Yeah. There. If you're into whatever hobby, you're going to see something and you're like, man, that's a great deal. And you're not going to need it or particularly want it, but you'll get it because it's a great deal and it's something you are interested in.
Yep, that's happened to me on a number of occasions, which is why I now find myself in possession of the Atraxa 4-color commander deck that just came out.
Yep.
Because I saw it in a Walmart and I was like, oh, those are selling for like 60 or 70 bucks on Amazon. This one's at retail price. I should grab it.
Yep.
Oh, wait, I don't need this. No one else has one of these. What
Hold
am I going to do with it?
Wait a minute.
Oh, well. So okay. That's what it says about you. You are normal. Everything's okay. There is love. There is safety here.
Yeah. No one will judge you.
Yep. All right. Next question is from Havoc4. Says, Dear System Mastery, I was just listening to your Screamers review and was greatly amused. I just wanted to get your thoughts on an interpretation of the idea of the future person who loves modern things outside of all sense. So to break that down for you real quick, that's one of my personal least favorite tropes in sci-fi, which is that the main character, to make him relatable to the audience, is always like, here in the year 2250, I love Converse sneakers and motorcycles, and I hate hovering stuff.
Yeah, it's always like, man, what I really like is the 83 Cubs. And you're like, ah, great, sure, why not?
Yeah. There's been over 200 seasons of baseball since then, but I like 1983 for some reason.
Yeah, it's always just, what year is it when this is made? They like stuff around that year.
Yeah, or from before it. So, you know, like on Star Trek where you have all
you
those...
get the, like, detective novels and shit
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they're all obsessed with, like, the 1940s on that show instead of the 2140s when presumably interesting stuff was happening.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You'd think.
You'd never know. You're not going to find out on those shows because they don't. It doesn't work that way.
No.
They can't be like, hey, remember 2140 Angels season? Wasn't that awesome? Because then no one watching can relate to it. But
yeah.
I personally hate it. I wish that they would use those as opportunities to build the world.
Exactly.
So let's finish this off here. I was trying to think of what that looks like now and realized it describes historical reenactment pretty well. So do you have any fun ideas of what the weird future Renfair focusing on our own modern times would look like?
That's
a sudden right turn at the end. What are Renfairs of the future going to be doing to simulate the 2016 era?
Hot dog carts?
Yeah, you're going to see some
That's going to be like your turkey leg vendor.
Yeah, hot dog carts. Let's see. Non-representational democracy, they're going to have a lot of that.
Video games where you actually use a controller, like
Ooh,
a baby.
Yeah, you're, instead of just using your mind waves or whatever the fuck. Yeah, let's see. The fantastic music of Beyonce.
Yes, obviously. definitely going to have lots of people in cargo shorts.
Yeah, yeah, cargo shorts are going to be a big thing.
Ironic t-shirts.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to, when you come in and you're issued your tickets, you're also going to be issued your Twitter handle.
Ah.
It'll be like on a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Twitter on a stick.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's see. What do we got next, John?
We got Spike.
Ah, yeah, yeah, Spike. Okay.
Okay. Dear Princess Celestia, I am part of a small gaming group. Just two of us, honestly. I run Ogres and Oubliettes for my good friend Big M. Anyway, we've been asked to let a friend of a friend join our game this week because they're going out of town and he needs someone to hang out with. The guy has a major better-than-you attitude, but we want to be good friends. Should we let him play, knowing he is going to be disruptive to be good friends, or tell him to take a hike and deal with a meaning of friendship lecture? Your friend, Spike. Well, Spike, let me tell you.
First of all, Spike, I'm amazed you can talk. I thought you were the dumb Stegosaurus one.
No, no. This is the vampire from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, shoot. Okay, yeah. All right. I figured he was either the dumb Stegosaurus or he was the cool space cowboy.
No, no. Not the cool space cowboy. The shitty Earth cowboy.
Well, anyway, I guess we have to address what Spike here needs to do in regards to being a good friend or issuing a lecture.
Yeah, so, well, if he's not a good friend, then he's going to get a friendship lecture. But what I want to know is, why aren't you giving the rude person a friendship lecture? If someone has a better-than-you attitude and they're going to show up to your game, you should give them a friendship lecture first.
Man, I don't want a friendship lecture, though. I don't want a friendship lecture under any capacity.
Well, even if you're at Friendship 101?
Nope, I sure don't. I don't want to take that class. Do I have to?
I mean, it's one of the prereqs, so yeah, probably.
God damn it. Okay. Well, can I at least just tape the notes and, like, play them? Like, how much of the class do I need to attend to at least get a C?
I mean, you'd probably want to be there for a few of them. I mean, you're obviously going to need to be there for the midterm and the final.
Yeah, okay, so I've got that planned out.
Yeah.
All right.
And you'll want to go to a few of the key lectures. I mean, obviously, a lot of them are a little easier to understand. You can just read the book. But there's some that his notes you're going to want to get.
All right, fair enough. I'm feeling like Friendship 101 is probably an easy A.
You'd think that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It's not one of those classes where they're like, look to your left, now look to your right. One of those people is your friend. Or is it? Is that actually what it happens? And then they're just like, all right, end class dismissed. You did it, everybody.
You've got it.
Every person in here has one friend out of two.
Everyone only has one friend.
Look to your left, look to your right, now look in six other directions. One of those people will not pass.
Look to your left, look to your right. One of those people will kill you.
All right, so let's see. I don't play games with douches if I can in any way avoid it. There's an old adage that goes around the gaming community, which is no gaming is better than bad gaming.
Yep.
Which basically means that if the game's going to be bad, don't go. You don't need to go. You don't need to play D&D once a week. You won't melt. So if the
game the shit you will do with your time outside of the game is going to be way more enjoyable than you sitting there suffering through a game that is bad.
Yeah. So if in a situation where a person is unpleasant and you don't feel like playing a game with them, but you are forced to hang out with them, you can still come up with alternatives to minimize the issue and be a good friend to whoever it was that foisted this person off on you in the first place.
Yeah.
Just say, hey, we're going to a movie this time. And also, we're real quiet during movies.
And also, we're real high.
So, anyway, best of luck to you, Space Cowboy. Let's see. From Gary Symbiadax. Dear John and Geoferry. Is some Pokemon? What's happening right now?
Yeah, Geoffrey.
Yeah, it's Geoferry.
Yeah, it's Geoferry.
Geoferry. It's some kind of fancy clam. All right, you've just discovered the secret to time travel. However, for some reason, you're only able to travel back to your own bedroom exactly 6 years and 9 months ago, and when you arrive, your past self is lying naked on your bed. My question for you is, do you eat that hot dog? All right, so Here's the weird thing.
How
that.
Did you know that 6 years and 9 months ago, I had a hot dog laying there next to me?
I didn't live here 6 years ago. I moved into this house about 2 years ago.
That's, well, I mean, is it this bedroom 6 years and 9 months ago, or is it whatever your bedroom was?
I don't know. The question is worded in such a way as to, I think, to leave a loophole there for me to have that argument.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and be the question master on this one then.
Oh, okay, great. So does the bedroom follow me around through time? If I go back in time 6 years and 9 months, am I in the room that we're in right now, or am I in my old bedroom, my old shitty bedroom a couple blocks from here?
No, you're going to be in this bedroom 6 years and 9 months ago. However, you will also be lying naked in the bed in this room.
Okay, so that's going to be weird because I never even saw this place until about 3 years ago.
Yep.
So that's going to be a weird, crazy mystery for me.
Yeah, but when you show up, there is a hot dog lying next to a naked you.
So it's okay. So as opposed to the initial thing where I guess the idea was, do you suck your own dick is sort of a joke.
Yeah. No, there's an actual hot dog.
Okay, so there's an actual hot dog. Describe it for me.
Okay, so it's a fairly naked hot dog. There's not really any condiments on it. It is warm.
That's a real important distinction.
Yeah. Now, it looks fresh.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like a high-quality dog, but it doesn't look like a shitty Frank either.
Okay, let's see. Is it bunned?
It is bunned.
Okay, is the bun okay? Is it an okay bun?
Yeah, the bun is still soft at this point.
All right.
But you know if that dog sits in there long enough, it's going to crisp up.
Fair enough. All right, so here's my thing. I'm traveling back in time, but at the very least, I am conscious. I'm looking at my unconscious naked self, and I am thinking about what it's going to be like for him in the next couple of hours. At some point, he's going to wake up in a terrifying place because he's never seen this room before.
Uh-huh.
He's out of place. He must have been drugged and dragged to a house that he will someday come to live in, and this will haunt him for years. So if there's one small measure of comfort that I can provide to him at this time, it's a hot dog for when he wakes up. So I'm not going to eat the hot dog. I'm gonna leave the hot dog lay so that I may eat the hot dog in a short time.
Okay. Good. Now, are you going to have to record this in your yet?
Oh, or will I get frag, I guess? I don't know. I will have to inform my unconscious younger self to eat the hot dog and then to go back in time later on to visit himself and do not eat the hot dog at that time.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it'll go into my yet and my span journal.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So that should be fine.
Okay.
All right. So as always, rules of hot dog questions are sacrosanct. John is to pass no judgment.
Yep.
There is no right or wrong answer. There are only hot dog questions.
All right. So coming up next, we've got Madness Dreamer. Dear Hank and John. Aw.
Oh, man.
There man, I wish.
Do you think there might be some actual famous people named Hank and John that he's sending?
Yes, Hank and John Green.
Is that a thing?
Yes. Oh, they're the Vlog Brothers.
They're Vlog Brothers.
So, they are very, very famous.
So that's some YouTube thing that I've never heard of.
And very rich, and I wish that we were them.
Which one do you wish you were?
I wish I was, what is it? Is it John Green is the one who's got, like, you know, Fault in Our Stars and all that shit? Like, yeah. That's him.
Oh, like the author of Fault in Our Stars and stuff? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then they're deservedly famous. They're not just some YouTube nonsense. Like
I mean,
usual.
They were.
Okay.
But they have branched out from just being YouTube nonsense.
Oh, well, good for them.
Yeah, they're cool brothers, and good for them.
All right, cool. So we're getting a question for some people I haven't heard of, but you have.
Yeah, please, I know about the YouTubes.
Please proceed.
Recently, I broke up with my girlfriend. Oh, I'm sorry. I was having some self-worth issues and felt completely unlovable. I have been seeing someone and feel so much better and realize that I'm still very much in love with her. I want to talk to her about getting back together, but I frankly do not know how to go about doing that. Do I call her? Am I allowed to be sad and want to get back together? What is the correct way of attempting this, or should I just cut my losses and forget about her? Thanks.
So are those the kind of questions that they normally get on their show?
Normally they just vlog back and forth at each other, and they pick a topic and do a lot of research. Basically the exact opposite of what we do.
Oh, where we do literally no research, and anytime we get bad reviews on any of the social media review sites, it's because of that.
Yeah.
That one thing.
So, I mean, honestly, I would say, you know, all jokes aside.
Yeah, I'm going to leave this one to you, because I don't usually... you've got a little more expertise in this particular area of mental distress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Just from my own point of view, basically anyone that you were in love with and you break up with and it wasn't like horrifically bad. And even then, sometimes with that, you're still going to be feeling love for that person, especially once the sting of why you broke up and the breakup fades. You're still going to have the memories of why you loved them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not weird. I mean, obviously, you're going to have that.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, the thing that worries me about this is you say you are currently seeing someone, and
I think they're seeing a therapist. It doesn't say it specifically, but by seeing someone, I think they mean they sought professional help.
Okay, because I'm like, if you're seeing someone as in I'm seeing someone dating them, please do not like attempt to get back together with an ex while you are dating someone. That's awful.
I mean, unless you're like poly. I'm not judging if you are. That's a thing that people do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't say that. That would be a useful tidbit of information in that case. But even then, I still think seeing someone means literally like seeing a therapist in this. Because of the context of the sentence, that, you know, I have been seeing someone and feel so much better. Whoever they're seeing is helping them. So my thought was it's professional.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I mean, if it is, then even then, I would first think about why it was you broke up. Given that you said you broke up with her, if the reasons that you did that are still there and nothing has really changed in that way, then if you get back together, that's still going to be there and still going to be an issue, which means even if you did get back together, you're probably going to end up after that like first honeymoon period when you're back together, end up regretting it.
Yep. Yeah, I can see that.
But I mean, as someone who has broken up with and gotten back together several times with different people, it's not like it can't work. It's just a matter of you do need to address why you broke up in the first place and what has changed and why you would get back together.
I'm just now realizing exactly how much your love life has been based almost entirely on how lazy you are.
Yeah, just so lazy.
Just like, I've already got this girlfriend. Why work on a new one? I already know all the buttons to push here. All right, let's see. Let's go to the next one. Hey, it's a dramatic shift of pace. This one comes to us from Sir Phobos. Dear Jeff and John, who do you main in Overwatch? We'll start with you. Who's your main? I had a hard time picking. They're all real good.
I mean, I'll fill depending on the map and what everyone else has picked.
Yeah.
But
let's go with your favorite fills.
Okay, so if we need a healer, Mercy is amazing. I love Mercy. I'll even pick Mercy before other people have finished and I don't need to fill because I just like playing her.
Okay.
If we're doing a defensive map, I do like Torbjorn a lot.
Oh, Torbjorn is just pimp. He's so good.
And then if I need to fill a tank role, I'll go with Reinhardt. I absolutely love him. I don't like the offensive people, honestly. Everyone in the offense section, not a fan.
Luckily, everyone loves them, so they are always constantly picked, and you don't have to feel like you're missing out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll occasionally be like, oh, God, we need some more damage. I'll do, like, Pharah.
Yeah, Pharah's pretty much the best of them for me. Although, actually, I've really come around to Sombra.
All right.
So I'm going to say Sombra for offensive people for myself. But my main, the one I've been playing the most of by far recently, is Zarya.
Oh, okay.
And
that is just my least favorite tank.
It's weird. I've really come to like her, although I've yet to find a way to get a niche. I never feel like I'm, you know, when it comes up at the end and it's like, MVPs, here's the people you can vote for. When I'm Zarya, I get so much work done. I'm getting kills. I'm keeping people alive. I'm doing a great job of guarding the space. I am very sticky. I don't die. But I am not recognized. You don't get recognized.
No.
Zarya works from the shadows, basically.
Well, yeah, because with, like, Reinhardt, when you put that shield up, people are going to shoot at it to try and bring it down.
Yeah.
So your damage blocked percentage is going to go way up. And then, of course, if you're any of the healers, you're going to get a decent amount of heals done.
Yeah, and with Zarya, what it is you put the shield up, and people are like, oh, okay, I'll switch to killing someone else. Because you're protecting two people, yourself and one other person.
Yeah.
But I really love the aesthetic of her, so she's, and the I like the grenade mechanics. So she's been my favorite of the defensive heroes. My utility hero favorite at the moment, I have been really leaning on Hanzo.
Weird, because I'm not a huge fan of the snipers in this game.
Hanzo's my favorite of the snipers, primarily because he doesn't zoom.
Yeah, that is neat.
The game doesn't need the zoom. The zoom's it's too fast pitch for zooming, or too fast paced for zooming. So Hanzo's been my guy. And then finally, when it comes to healer picks, I'm a Lucio man.
Oh, Lucio. I love him.
Yeah.
I think he's amazing. I'm just bad at him.
Yeah. Well, that is the thing. His speaker gun is so weird to get used to. Anyway, second part of the question. What does your partner's preference in Overwatch heroes say about them as a person?
Wait,
partner?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess podcast partners. Fine, sure.
Yeah, no.
In System Mastery and Limited Liability Corporation, I guess you are my partner.
Exactly.
Although I prefer to think of you as the janitor.
Yes, I prefer to think of you as the male boy.
Well, I am a male boy.
You know, what it says about you as a person for your picks is generally that you're a dumb idiot and you picked the wrong thing.
I didn't pick May. Come on now. May is the worst because she's the troll pick. Like, oh, you guys trying to go somewhere? What if I put a wall there? My own team. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
That's like all she's for.
She is there to be like, all right, we're going to come out the gate and nope, I made a wall there.
Yeah, that's her only thing. She might as well just press H at that point and switch to someone good. You already did the joke.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Your picks seem pretty straightforward and normal to me. I think you might be a well-adjusted player of Overwatch.
Yeah, I may have, I don't know, played the game a bit.
Yeah. All right. So, let's see here.
All right. So, next up, we've got Ted Cheddar. Ted Cheddar coming to us.
Live.
How can I get more people to join my table at a public RPG meetup? I had a great game of Monster Hearts with two people yesterday, but I'd like to get a decent-sized group.
So, basically, you're asking us how to peacock a table?
Well, for public RPG meetup, mostly it's being able to advertise.
Yeah, yeah. You got a peacock, like I was saying. He's asking us how to engage more two sets.
Yes, indeed.
First of all your gamers need to at least be a six or higher, otherwise you're just wasting your own time.
Indeed.
Yeah.
As long as people know what you're doing, then they'll be down for it. I think, especially with some of the less known games, like if you're not saying, hey guys, I'm playing D&D, you already know this.
This is Pathfinder again, guys.
Yeah, so if you're playing something a little more obscure, I'd say advertising it and advertising the plot. Like being able to sum up what your plot summary is or the setting summary is much more likely to get people hooked and into your game than just saying, hey, I'm playing this. Does anyone want to come play?
Yeah. I'd also say put out a bowl of Starburst and Abba Zabbas.
Just a big old bowl of Hershey's Kisses.
Yeah, Hershey's Kisses. And all the weird, crappy varieties that you don't want.
Yeah, but make sure they all have basically the same wrapper. So people have to stand there at your table, like wrap it, and then kind of take a bite and see if it's one of the ones they like or not.
Yeah.
And then once they're standing there, you're like, why don't you have a seat?
Hey, man, you want to play Monster Hearts with us?
I'm Chris Hansen. Why don't you have a seat right over there?
Hey, I see you came over here to play a teenage romance game with a sex move. I'm Chris Hansen.
Why don't you have a seat?
It's funny. I just backed Monster Hearts 2, and I'm really looking forward to it, and I feel bad for that joke.
Man, I am super looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's see the second question.
Yep, second question. What are Calendar Man's lesser-known crimes?
Well, one of the lesser-known things about Calendar Man is that during one of the major Justice League crossovers, he got connected to Metron, managed to go back in time, and it's his fault that we're stuck with Gregorian over Julian Calendars.
Wow, what a jerk.
I know, right? It's insane.
I also heard he stole the eighth day of the week.
That's true.
Only the Beatles remember it.
That is correct. Yeah, the Beatles memorialized the fact that there used to be an eighth day in a week. It was stolen, of course, by Calendar Man. But it's a lesser-known crime because he stole our knowledge of the eighth day of the week as well.
Exactly. It's why people are like, huh, we have this song called 8 Days a Week, and yet we don't have that. That's a weird thing to sing about, but they knew.
Another thing, interestingly, is that even though we still call it Daylight Savings Time, we long ago lost the daylight because Calendar Man stole it.
Yeah. It's no longer saved.
Yeah. It's not worth saving. Calendar Man got there first. Let's see. It is also his fault that Christmas this year has an observed day of a Monday instead of a Friday, which means you have a lead-in of a full 5 days before Christmas, even though that's the worst.
It's also his fault that Christmas decorations go up way earlier.
He's been doing that. He's been insidiously...
It's him and his sidekick, the Christmas Creep.
The Christmas Creep. Between the two of them, they have made it to gotten to the point where Christmas decorations are in stores like well before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they're up there in October, and you're like, come on now.
Come on, where's the red and gold stuff I need to put up for Thanksgiving? I need some Thanksgiving merchandise. And they're like, well, then you should have been here before Halloween.
Then you should have been here in August.
So, a lot of good crimes. Calendar Man is again, a lesser-known Batman villain who primarily commits the worst possible calendar-related crimes.
Yep.
He's our new mascot. We love him dearly. Yeah. All right, let's see here. From Dear Everett, or Dr. Everett Mann. Dear Jeff and John, what are some of the worst habits you've had as both GMs and players? What have you done to either get better about them or to mitigate them?
Worst habit I've had as a GM, and it sort of bled over into being a player, was I would be real likely to just steal things outright from pop culture. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a D&D adventure that was literally based around the Infinity Gems back in the day. They had to fight Thanos even. I mean, we're talking...
You just don't care.
I was just straight ripping it out. I did not care. But, I mean, you know, I'm a 13-year-old coming up with a game for D&D. I was not really given much of a damn at that point.
Fair enough. I, on the other hand, have a problem that is ongoing and not fixable. I am an incorrigible joke teller, and I cannot let anything pass by if there's any kind of pun or innuendo or anything that can be divested from it. At best, the best way to treat me in a role-playing game is to sit me near John so I can at least just sort of whisper them to him.
Yeah.
And then just sort of that, get it out of my system. Because otherwise, if I don't have an outlet, I'm just going to, I won't let the game be serious.
It's true.
Yeah.
What I've done to mitigate mine is I'll allow myself to have bits and pieces of some pop culture stuff in a character or a story, but I'm usually a little bit better about hiding it.
But yeah,
Blending it into original ideas rather than just stealing wholesale.
You warn people in advance. You're like, guys, I like Sliders too much to not make every role-playing game I run into Sliders.
Guys, look.
So if this is Sliders again, at least mea culpa.
Just know what you're getting into.
You're getting into Sliders.
Look, what you're going to do is you're going to show up, you're going to go to another plane, and you're going to eat a small burger.
Yeah, I was going to say... People at home don't realize I'm talking about the TV show. They think I'm talking about White Castle.
Guys, I love these little burgers way too much.
Even though I've never had one. There's no White Castles around here.
What you can do, though, is go to your local freezer section at your store and get them White Castle burgers.
Yeah, no, fuck that. Frozen hamburgers are gross, and White Castle burgers, from my understanding, are also gross from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a good taste that tastes good together.
The fact that White Castle is the one that is like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and put this in the freezer section. I'm like, really? Because no, you can't go into the freezer section and be like, here's a bunch of like McDonald's cheeseburgers that you can just buy and toss into the like oven.
No, it's weird. There's a couple restaurants that have managed to break into the frozen food game. It's TGIF, White Castle, and...
Claim Jumper.
Claim Jumper, exactly, yeah. But man, White Castle, why?
Yeah, I don't know.
So anyway, there you go. Those are our terrible, horrible traits that we have as gamers. Let's see here. And he's got a question for John Wick. So, John, you're going to be taking the role of John Wick, the game designer, not the action hero. I've been running a rousing game of Nobleman and Betrayal for my group with intricate plots the players will only be able to solve with the help of my masterful NPCs. However, I've become worried that they've started to find other ways of having fun in the game. How can I best put a stop to this and ensure they know I'm far more clever and intelligent than they are?
Well, what you're going to need to do is... At first, seem like you're encouraging their other types of fun. Are they getting their jollies by being on a boat instead of investigating your weird crimes with masterful NPCs? Perhaps tell them, yes, in fact, one of these NPCs will give you a boat and they have a plan for you to go out to sea. Then what you're going to do is sink that boat. And I want you to kill off all but two of them. And I want you to describe those deaths in excruciating detail and make sure that when the other two get back to the mainland, that they have as many derangements as possible and always bring it up.
Fair enough. All right, follow up here. John Wick, the action hero, not the game designer. Same question.
Have they messed with my puppy? No, then I don't care.
They have not messed with your dog.
Okay, then whatever, let them do what they want.
Okay, good. All right, thank you. All right. Next, you got the next one there, John.
All right, this is coming to us from Stephen Boosh.
Boosh.
Who would win in a fight, Batman or Goku? Goku.
Goku, I guess. No, wait, hang on.
Hang on.
What? How much preparation, blah, 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 Batman?
I don't care. Batman has all the preparation in the world.
Okay, and so we're going to say Batman then?
And we're going to, I'm going with Goku. I'm going with Goku forever.
All right, describe your scenario. What's the situation where Goku wins this fight?
Okay, so Goku spirit bombs Batman and he blows up.
All right, Batman is dodged on a number of occasions Darkseid's Omega Beams.
Yeah, but those are just beams. This isn't a bomb we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. So here's what's going to happen. Batman, months before the fight, will figure out why they're fighting and thwart it. That's the thing with Batman is he'll be like, oh, someone's setting up a fight between me and Goku. Goku will blow up the planet and kill me in the attempt. But who's setting up the fight? I'll just stop them.
No, because the person setting up the fight is Vegeta, and he also can't stop Vegeta.
No, I'm pretty sure he can stop Vegeta.
No, he can't stop Vegeta. He can stop Krillin, because Krillin doesn't have any powers.
Krillin's just a human. Doesn't have any power, yeah. Well, whatever. Our votes are that you're saying Goku and I'm saying Batman.
Yes.
People are forcing us to have this argument.
Indeed.
All right. Who would win in a fight between Goku and Ronda Rousey?
It's Goku. It's always Goku.
Okay. Who would win in a fight between Goku and a slightly cooler Goku with sunglasses?
Trick question. Also Goku.
Fair enough.
All right. So, on the subject of burying the lead in RPG fluff, I'm not sure where Seventh Sea stands. Because, yes, it's an Age of Sail pirate game where you can't ever sail or pirate, but that's because there isn't a goddamn new world to go to. It's totally leadless. Which obviously begs the question, what genre has least successfully translated to the RPG medium? My money's on giant robots.
Okay, so which genre has least successfully translated to the RPG medium?
Yes.
Let's see. It's really hard to do this because so many of the old genres that you would have picked in the olden days have great games now.
Yeah.
Like, there's an RPG in development right now that is Spanish or Mexican soap operas.
Yes.
So that's a thing that exists. There's Monster Hearts, of course, handles teen romance extraordinarily well.
Yeah, I think the two things that really stand out to me are, one, just comedy, not like cartoon comedy, because you've got things like Toon. Or,
even Toon's a little clunky, but it's okay.
Like, I'd say the closest you get is Paranoia to being a just straight comedy game.
Yeah, that's true. Mostly because comedy isn't something you can roll. You can't be like, I rolled an 18, the joke I told is really good.
Yeah, you can't just be like, stand up the comicking.
Yeah, so comedy is always a tricky wicket. So that's definitely a genre that just hasn't really been hit especially well. What was your other one?
Horror. And horror. Ooh, where it's
that's an interesting,
actually
a lot of
played
horror
for horror. Because so much of the stuff like the White Wolf games or like Monster Hearts, anything that includes horror elements is usually doing that and twisting it in some way.
Yeah, it's usually horror is the paint, and then there's a brush that tells the genre. They're using the horror tropes to sort of paint a picture, but the picture isn't really about trying to scare the players.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you look at Vampire, it's not about horror as much as it is about politics. Monster Heart's about teenage romance. You've got Werewolf, which is more about like activism and
about,
nature.
Well, let's say Call of Cthulhu. What's it? That's definitely a horror game about horror, right?
Yes.
But it's just not a very good one, is what you're saying.
Having never been able to play Call of Cthulhu, I feel like it could work. I like the sanity mechanic in there, mm-hmm. but it's probably the best one I could name off the top of my head for a horror one, because most of the other horror games, like I said, aren't really doing it for horror.
Sure.
And if they do try to do it for horror, it tends to fall flat on its face, like, you know, terror is never far behind. Don't look back.
So I'm going to go with musicals.
Huh.
Because although games often have bards and so on, there aren't really games that reward players for combining in song. And I feel like that'd be a rad thing. Even if it was a karaoke musical game, I like the idea of a game where, like, your characters have to actually get into sing fights, and to do so, you actually have to, like, go play Rock Band.
Yeah, there's a series of fantasy novels that takes place in a world where the magic system is all songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, this opera singer ends up getting transported there, and so she's ends up becoming this super powerful sorceress because she can sing real well. And the lyrics that you do are the spell's effects.
Which, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so I'm like, that, if you had an RPG based on that setting, that would be rad.
All right, so let's I'm going to ballpark an RPG idea to you right now.
Okay.
You make characters for the game. It's a party game, and like you were saying, it's sort of a fantasy world where the magic is music.
Uh-huh.
So when you design your character, you get to pick one band. And like you said, the lyrics describe the things that occur as a result of your magic.
Mm-hmm.
So each member of your party gets to pick one band. And then they can only use lyrics from that band.
Okay.
So your character's power set is based on, and also to give it an XP system that makes sense, you really have to start with a couple of songs. Like you can pick two or three songs to start your character, and then as you level up, you can unlock songs from your own band.
I was going to say, you'd pick a genre as your wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay,
I'm a rock wizard.
I'm a rock wizard, or
country
wizard. I'm a rap wizard, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then as you level up, you get to unlock bands within that.
I could see that. But I mean, like, you go rock wizard, you pick foreigner, you're pretty much good to go.
Who set this thing to head games?
See? So I like the idea of picking one band per player and then having the people look like they're, like, you know, you have to dress up. You have to have the accoutrement, your character does anyway, of the band that they have chosen.
See, but I like the genre idea because then you could just be like, what are you? Oh, I'm a hair metal wizard.
Oh, man, I do like the idea of a hair metal wizard.
Right?
Yeah, so folks, write in. That's our new idea for an RPG. Your powers are derived from lyrics from songs.
There you go.
All right? Or just let us know that we're dumb and that game exists already.
Yeah, I mean, if someone has an RPG out there that's basically Encore meets, like, Powered by the Apocalypse, yeah, then great.
Oh, my God, that is such a great idea. PBTA, right? Encore?
Exactly.
Christ, okay, well, we're writing that.
Yep. You know, that's the thing we're writing and we'll actually not ever do.
Folks, if someone else is already doing that, just don't tell us, because we...
Don't break my heart.
Don't ruin it for us.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Ooh, yeah, you can be a country wizard and do that achy breaky heart song on people.
Oh, man, I'm a country wizard and I keep summoning trucks and dogs.
And you keep going skydiving.
Or I'm a lady country wizard and I just keep killing my husband over and over.
I'm a country wizard and all of my spells need to be cast from a porch. All right. So let's see, where are we here? Trilobite asks, if you can get a DUI while riding a horse while you are drunk, depending on the state you're in, can you get a DUI if you are sober but the horse is drunk?
Well, no, because then you're driving over the influence.
Very good.
Ooh.
So here's an interesting tidbit of knowledge for you. It is very, very difficult to get a horse drunk.
Because normally, if you give them any type of alcohol, they'll just die.
Well, no. Well, yes. Any type of alcohol other than beer. Beer is actually a fairly common food for horses. They love beer because it's just made out of grain, which they like. And it's sugary, which they like. So horses drink beer all the time, and they don't get drunk from it because they're way too big for that small amount of alcohol going into their system. So it's very difficult to get a horse drunk. I think if you have succeeded, if you manage to get a horse to drink a bunch of hooch, then, yeah, you should get arrested for that, for reckless horse endangerment, and then you should be given a medal if the horse dies.
Yeah. Congratulations, you have recklessly endangered this horse, but it died, so good job.
Good job.
Horses are assholes.
You killed this horse. System Mastery, proud to come out once again, is against horses in all forms.
Anti-horse is System Mastery.
The car's been invented. Let's move on from these stupid things. If nothing else, let's move to better, cooler animals. Goats. Just... You know what? I don't want to go to see a horse race. I want to go see a goat race so bad.
So bad.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, we've got pig races.
Yeah. No jockey. Just goats racing.
Come on.
So, there you go.
All right. So, this one comes from Mirdradrak.
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 Yeah.
Pragananant.
Perfnet.
Pregante. Dear System Mastery, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Dominic the Italian Christmas donkey. They say the reindeer can already fly, so there's no reason for Santa to have a pet donkey to scale the hills of Italy, and it's silly to have an extra add-on to the whole Santa deal just for Italian Americans. Papa says, if you hear it on System Mastery, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Dominic the donkey?
Gosh, John. Do you think this might... I mean, I'm just going out on a limb here. Do you think this might be an episode of Italian Christmas Donkey Talk?
Yeah!
Hey, G! jingity jing. It's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing. The Italian Christmas donkey. La 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 la.
Oh, buongiorno and welcome. Welcome one and all to Italian A Christmas A Donkey Talk. I am your host, Flint Forge Olive Garden, joined as always by my good friend...
I am a Patricio Stonehearth.
And we, of course, as you can obviously tell, are dwarves.
Oh yes, right from the old country.
That's right, I always think of Mama.
Oh, she make a such a good bread.
Oh, she so did, and the panettone.
Oh, mwah.
Now, we have a question for us today about Dominic, the Italian A Christmas A Donkey.
No Christmas is complete without a Dominic.
That is absolutely true. Now, here in America, we have lost our way when it comes to understanding the story behind a Dominic.
Oh, many people don't understand his importance.
Now, Dominic dates back to, as the song would tell you, to the hills of Italy, where he can navigate where, come si dice, how you say, the reindeer cannot.
Oh, yes, he is so important, many people don't understand why.
It is as you can probably guess, it is because the hills of Italy, while storied and beautiful, are also riddled through with dwarven tunnels.
Oh, yes, and many people want to know, why would he be Italian a Christmas donkey and not just a dwarven a Christmas donkey?
Well, he's important to dwarves, it is true, but he is also very important to the other tunneling creatures of Italy, such as Sverfneblin.
Oh, the little gnomes.
Yes, the little underground gnomes.
Oh, the little boys are so cute.
So the bigger noses.
Oh, look at them scamper around every Christmas.
With their huge glowing, eyes.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yes, yes, and they speak with blurred underground mammals.
All the time they have little badges with them. He's so cute.
So Dominic is a truly Italiano phenomenono, as you will.
Oh, yeah. Every time Dominic shows up, he's a family.
So you can take as truth from us, from Flint Forge and Patricio, that there is a Dominic, the Italian Dwarven Christmas Donkey.
Of course.
Thank you so much for joining us.
And this has been Italian Christmas Donkey Talk.
Bueno. Buono.
Buono.
Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic. The cutest little donkey, you never see him kick. When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic, he'll be. Because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La la la, la 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 la.
Welcome back. That was weird. All right, last question comes to us from L. Dear Prudence, I've recently started the process of donating a kidney to a stranger. I'm pretty confident in my choice and excited about the chance to save a life. Most of my family has been mildly discouraging. With responses along the lines of, that's a nice idea, but have you thought about your health in the future? I have. The health risks are minimal, and again, it's a way to save a life, which outweighs a slightly increased chance of kidney problems later. The one exception is my mother-in-law. When she heard I was trying to donate, she went ballistic. She screamed at my wife and said that I was clearly mentally ill and suicidal. She wanted my wife to threaten to divorce me if I kept going through with the operation. She has kidney problems right now, nothing fatal, and nothing that will need a transplant in the future, or I would hold off on the donation on the off chance she needed my kidney later, and seems convinced that, because she has kidney problems, I'm going to get them in the future. I've tried talking to her, explaining exactly what the risks are and why they don't bother me. Whenever I try this, she cries and screams. It's gotten to the point where I don't want to hang out with her because I never know when she's going to go off about my kidneys. And I think it's only going to get worse as I get closer to donating. Is there anything I can do? I really want to donate a kidney, but I also want to have a working relationship with my mother-in-law. Thanks, donor-in-law.
Well, big thing here is you gotta sit her down and talk about the fears. Let her get the fears out, because I'm sure at this point, when she's mostly screaming or threatening, There's probably a lot of backlash between that. I mean, obviously you're going to be upset if she's talking to your wife about divorce. That's definitely overstepping some boundaries. So what you need to do is let her know about those boundaries that she's overstepping, and also let her know if she has these fears, is it coming from a place of worry about you? And if she's just trying to, you know, make sure that you are good in the future, then know that it's coming from a place of love, and you can build on that in order to make your relationship with the mother-in-law better.
You know, John, the other day, or Prudence, I guess in this case, we're both Prudence. You know, Prudence, the other day, I went and had an eye exam.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. I had an eye exam because my eyes have been steadily getting worse over the past couple of years, and I need to get my glasses adjusted. So I went and I had an eye exam, and I had some new glasses prescribed. And do you know the people I told about my eye exam?
Who?
Oh, it was you just now. And absolutely no one else, because my medical information is confidential and I don't need to tell people, and they don't find out when I go get things done because they don't care that much about the minutia of my daily life.
True.
Medical confidentiality is crucial. You don't need to tell your mother-in-law about your kidney donations. That's not her business. You can simply say, I will no longer discuss this matter with you, and leave the matter to drop. You don't need to tell her when the operation is, that you are still considering it, any of those things. Those kidneys are yours, what you do with them is yours, and that information is intended to remain private. And there you have it.
Well, yeah, there you go. That's our two different...
two very different answers, but they're both pretty good.
Yeah, we've got one answer that's real good, and then one answer that makes it so that you no longer have a relationship with your mother-in-law.
Sure,
and
you
is
do.
Bad.
She doesn't get to know. You just let you leave her to think that you probably accepted her words of wisdom and move on with your life.
Yeah, but at this point, you're also going to be relying on the wife to then be lying for you.
Nope.
Because it's not like she's not going to ask.
She's not lying. She's just not saying anything. She's just now saying, we are no longer discussing this issue with her.
Yeah, and that's going to stop the mother-in-law? Like, she's not going to go up to the wife and be like, so, has he done it? Is there any more news about it? Because then you are basically saying, like, wife, I need you to not do anything with your mom.
Fair enough. I feel like most issues in life that are this big, that other people get their nose into, that are not directly connected to you, and again, I'm speaking to you, Prudence.
Yes, Prudence.
Are not that big. It's going to come 2 years down the line. You're going to all be meeting at a niece's wedding. Your mother-in-law, who was screaming and yelling about this for months, without new fuel added to that fire of her screaming, will no longer be screaming. She'll just be happy to see you, and she'll move on with her life. There's going to come a point where you don't have a kidney in you, and even if she knows, what's she going to do? Yell it back in?
Yeah, well,
she's
yeah.
She's going to want to be involved with her grandkids and what have you. It will eventually settle.
Yeah.
Don't let in-laws ruin your or run your life. Don't let your parents run your life.
Well, I'm not saying do something based on whether or not mother-in-law is.
You seem to be under the impression that you can convince her by.
Oh no, I'm saying
about fear.
I'm saying you should talk to her and eventually, at the end of it, let her know sternly but delicately that you will be going through with this. Actually talking through what she thinks is a fear and what might happen and everything else in a calm way means that instead of it just being like, I disregarded everything that you care about and I went and did this and I told my wife not to tell you and then you found out, yeah, that's going to blow up real bad.
Fair enough. I think I'll answer this as the actual Prudence would answer this. Here we go. As the great Groucho Marx once said, I would not be a member of any club that would have me as a member. It is especially gauche to leave your Christmas lights out beyond January. Thank you so much for your question. Please buy my new book.
Great.
All right, great. All right. Shall we be done?
Let us be done.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for listening to Afterthought, everybody. This has been a lot of questions. It's a long episode. We love it that way. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting the Patreon, for buying our t-shirts and blah, blah, blah. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, SystemMastery at Gmail, Twitter, or Facebook. And again, just to remind you all, there is a contest going on as soon as this episode drops. If you retweet this episode's tweet, then you will be entered in a drawing to win a signed copy of Immortal, The Invisible War, that we will mail to you.
Yeah, you probably won't get it in time for any of the holiday nonsense.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Not even if you're like an Eastern Orthodox Christian and you celebrate Christmas on January 6th. It's still not going to arrive till sometime in like late January or early February. But it can be yours. I mean, why would you want to do? Give it away to someone? They're not going to want that. We are literally giving you our signed garbage.
Who wants my signed garbage?
So
I got an empty beer can here. Who wants it?
So if you would like a copy of Immortal: The Invisible War, a book that is almost entirely in full color, signed by the members of System Mastery, only heavily used.
Only heavily used.
Oh, yeah. Just some scratches, damage, scratches, bits, chips, dings.
Chips, dips, chains, whips.
Holes, burn marks, tea stains. Some of it was used to wipe our butts.
A little sticky.
A little bit sticky, that's true. Heavily floured, lightly fried. Then you can enter only by retweeting this episode of Afterthought. We'll pick a winner. We'll mail you the book signed by us in what I'm going to go ahead and guess, because I don't know yet, Silver Sharpie.
Yeah, why not?
Sure, that's the plan. So just watch for that. Retweet this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and you guys have a good week.
And a happy holiday.